Welcome to The Whole Steward, the holistic approach to wealth from a Christian worldview. I'm your host, Andrew Stanton, and I'm glad you've joined. The debate of a free market against a socialist economy rages on. And if the answer seems obvious to you as a listener of The Whole Steward, just know that there are many who don't understand the dangers and folly of the one over the other. And no, Jesus was not the first socialist. Your worldview affects your opinion on labor laws and business incentives, among other things. We discuss the necessity of a free market today on The Whole Steward. This is episode number 59, and I'm so thankful you've joined. As I said, we'll be discussing how our worldview as a Christian affects our view of labor laws, a free market, and why those things are so important. To lay the foundation, if you didn't catch it, I did episode 25, on the necessity of private property. And that is based squarely in the Ten Commandments, the command that you shall not steal. Behind that command is all supported by the rest of Scripture in that we are to own and steward private property and to be careful that we are doing a good job with it and to not steal from others who the implication is that that private property belongs to them. So there's a big worldview implication here that we need to recognize and actually address in our society right now, in our this debate between the free market and socialism. Is it possible that the government could come in and enact socialism and everybody gets a fair shake because some overlording government or entity is able to ensure that everything is fair? And then how do you define fair? What does that mean? Well, I had a couple of conversations with some folks this week that it was surprising to me that they were just straight up, we need socialism. And that way everybody will get a fair shake. The context was in, you know, tipping your waiter at a restaurant, for example. And we were talking about how all these workers are expecting tips all the time. And you see it even on the checkout thing. Like if you go into a stand-up restaurant and you just buy a water bottle, right? And you put it on the counter, it's going to be $1.50 for the water. It pops up a little sign that says, how much do you want to tip? 18%, 22%, 30%? What? It's like, you know, what did you do? I just picked up a water bottle off the counter and put it there. And so the discussion then that followed was, well, tips are meant to be a form of saying thank you for good service. And if you don't get good service, then you wouldn't tip, or at least not as much. It's a very great way to do it. Now, one of the individuals pointed out, well, you know, tips came about from slavery, and it was a way for people to compensate slaves who wouldn't otherwise get compensated. Now, I've done, even just a few weeks ago, an episode on modern slavery. So if you didn't catch that, go back and listen to it. I forget which episode it is, but it's just a few episodes, you know, within the last five, I think, of episode number 59. So I think it was in the 50s. Anyways, go back and listen to that. But regardless, tipping, however it came about nowadays, is supposed to be for you to be able to say thank you for above and beyond service. It's not meant to be a way of, you know, expectation that you have to tip, right? Otherwise, you should probably bake that into the price and say up front, here's how much the service costs, right? The interesting thing was that the argument was made to me that, well, minimum wage is so low for workers. In fact, it's $2.13 for a server, for example, at a restaurant. And then the rest is tips. Well, that's not entirely correct, because I believe, and somebody message me if I'm wrong about this, but I believe that if the worker at the end of the day doesn't make whatever minimum wage is, $7.25 an hour, then the restaurant has to actually pay them $7.25 an hour if they didn't make that in tips. However, correct me if I'm wrong, please message me. The idea here is that when I go into a restaurant, usually I'm almost sure that whatever service a server is serving me is making more than $7.25 an hour, or even the California minimum wage, which is $16 an hour now in California, which is crazy. The government is coming in and trying to say, here's a minimum amount that we arbitrarily decided that this service is worth, whatever service it is. And I understand that there's labor protection laws and things like that. I'm not advocating for slavery here. That is not the goal. But what I want to point out is that whatever service or goods you're receiving has a certain value to you. And we talk about this on The Whole Steward. You have the 9 forms of capital. And any one of those forms, whether it's your spiritual capital or your physical capital, your intellectual capital or your relational capital, your cultural capital, your material capital, your financial capital, or your time, all of these things have a value. And you don't build that wealth in any one of those forms, and you can exchange one for another. I've talked about this many times. I exchange financial capital for gasoline to put in my van to drive to church to build my spiritual capital with my fellow believers who I'm also building relationships with. You see, all of these capitals are just constantly ebbing and flowing, and you are exchanging one for another all the time. If you buy something, you're not actually spending money. You're either buying a good or a service, an experience perhaps, or a meal that you're going to eat, whatever it is. If you were to go to the restaurant and the government were to swoop in and say, you know what, Andrew, I don't care what you value this meal at. We declare that you shall value it at X, whatever it is. Let's say it takes the restaurant an hour to prepare the meal, a total 1-man hour to prepare the meal. And let's say they all make minimum wage. And for sake of argument, let's say they make California's minimum wage, which is $16 an hour. So this meal has a total of all the people involved in the restaurant, the business owner, you know, the server, the cook, the busboy, all the people combined, it was a total hour, a total of 1 hour's of work. And let's say the meal costs $16. So what I'm saying is, when I walk into that restaurant and I buy that meal, it's $16 worth of value to me to receive that meal. Maybe it's a burger and fries and a drink, okay? For $16, it's hard to even find a good burger now for $16. But anyways, you get the point. That's what the value of the meal is to me. If you were to say, actually, Andrew, you need to pay $40 for that meal, I'm going to say, that's not valuable to me. I'm not going to take any one of the forms of capital that I have, whether it's my time, talents, whatever it is, of the 9 forms of capital that I've converted to financial capital, walked into the restaurant and said, now I'm going to buy this meal. There's no entity that can declare how much value that should be to the individual who's the customer. Likewise, how much does the business value their time? Maybe the workers were totally happy to work for $16 an hour. And they were happy to prepare that meal for you. And you know what? You stimulated the economy. You gave money to the business. They got to go home and spend that money on their food and groceries for their children. So it was valuable to them to provide the meal in exchange for the $16. And it was invaluable for me to walk in and give you the $16 for exchange for the meal. That's an exchange of value. That's what we do. We exchange all these different forms of capital. There's no possible way the government could come in and declare what the value is. And the argument was made, well, we need socialist policy so that everybody gets a fair shake. I said, no, not every meal is the same. Not every server or cook is the same. Some cooks make better meals than other cooks. And you're telling me that I should say to that cook who made a better meal, sorry, your meal is declared to be worth the exact same as this horrible junk meal that was made over here? Absolutely not. Maybe the service was terrible. Maybe the service was great. All these things are varying values. And so the problem with this argument for socialism is that it just assumes that everybody would provide equal value and also receive equal value for everything. But we know that's not possibly true. There are some jobs that, I'm sorry, they're just not that valuable. You could be sitting in a factory somewhere and be making a widget, okay? You do the same thing over and over. You take two pieces together, you take two pieces that are separate, you stick them together, and it moves on the assembly line. Doesn't take a lot of brain work. You got to follow instructions, but that's it. Take these two pieces, hook them together, pass it on. Take these two pieces, hook them together, pass it on. Take these two pieces, hook them together, pass it on. That's what you do all day. If you're working in that factory that takes these two pieces, puts them together, and makes this widget. And I'm sorry, that's worth something to the business because they have to sell whatever product it is on the end of the line, right? It has to be worth something to the end customer, and it's only worth so much. And every little piece that had to be put together has to add up to less than it was worth. Otherwise, there's no value provided to the entrepreneur who said, hey, I got this great idea. Let's make this widget. That's a lot of work to do that. And so all of this has to work out. Otherwise, it's not a viable business. And my comment was, well, the market should determine the wages. Okay? If the market for making this widget or making this meal in our two examples is such that it's worth $7.25 an hour for somebody to do that. And if the guy says, you're not paying me enough, well, there's somebody right behind you who's willing to do that same job for $7.25 an hour, right? So that's the market. I'm sorry, that's the market. That's what people value that good or service at. And for you to come in and say, you know what, the government, of all things, the government is gonna unilaterally declare the value of everything. This is the same thing for rent controls. It's the same thing for minimum wage. It's the same thing for all these things. Now, I'm not saying anarchism and, you know, allow the oppressors to oppress the oppressed all the time. That's why I'm arguing for the importance of the free market. Now, somebody will say, well, you know what? The government needs to come in and incentivize businesses to do things, and then they can afford to pay their, you know, workers more for making the same widget. You know what? I get it. I understand they also incentivize, you know, bearing children, but that's a very obvious benefit that population growth is good for an economy. And we've talked about that on past episodes as well. But it does not work for the government to unilaterally be able to say that meal is worth X, you know, whatever it is, $16. It can't work. So if somebody comes in and says, hey, you know, that meal was pretty good. It costs $16, but it was worth way more than that. I'd pay $16 any day for that. In fact, I'd pay $20 for that meal. You know what? If you'd pay $20 for that meal, you want to let that person know who made a good meal, this was worth $20 to me. Here's a $4 tip. And that's where the tip comes in. So now you're saying, hey, I really appreciate and I actually value your meal at more than what you told me you would actually do it for. And thus the market, the free market, is born. And now we are all incentivized to do what? Create more value. Socialism does the opposite. If the government unilaterally says, everybody gets the same, we're going to declare the prices for everything, there's no incentive to create more value. You know what? The guy who makes a terrible meal, why would he do anything different? Because he's going to get $16 for that same meal that the other guy worked really hard to make a good one. This may sound very basic, but I'm telling you, I was in a conversation this week that this was like foundational, and it just wasn't there. And this is what we're dealing with in our country right now. There's a whole bunch of people who don't understand this. The idea of exchange of value between these different forms of capital. People think, oh, you know, $7.25, it's so low. Yeah, it is low. Like in California, you can barely buy a gallon of gas for that price. You have to work a whole hour at $7.25 minimum wage to buy 1 gallon of gasoline in California. It's not quite that bad, but it's pretty close. That's what a gallon of gasoline is valued at. And I understand there's very complex forces in our not free market at the global scale that is pushing on all these things. But I'm talking about just from person to person, this exchange of value. So socialism, bad. Private property ownership, good and important. And free market exchange of value, very good. Okay, so I want to leave you with just this one verse. And we're talking about one person who provides a lot of value, right? That really good meal that the guy paid a lot of money for and then tipped him a lot for, versus the guy who made the bad meal and didn't get a tip and made very little money. The rich and the poor. Let's call those two people the rich and the poor, okay? The poor are providing very little value, if any at all, to the world. And honestly, that's why they're poor. Our country provides the way to fix that. And there are countless stories of people saying, I grew up in a poor neighborhood, in a poor family, all this stuff. Not that they were poor relationally, but maybe monetarily. And they figured out, you know what? There's a way to do it differently. And there's a way to provide more value. And we're going to do that. And then they're rewarded for it. The rich and the poor, okay? They dwell together. Proverbs 22, starting in verse 1. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. And favor is better than silver or gold. So just to set the context, hey, it's not all about the money, okay? When the restaurant gets a good name, that's to be chosen over silver and gold. When the business owner who's doing a good job, or you as a whole steward, you're running your business and doing it well, and that reputation has spread, and so-and-so whole steward is over there, it got a good reputation, that's to be chosen over great riches. And favor is better than silver or gold. So this is not about the money, although sometimes money is involved. It's more about, you know, I mean, you could be poor or rich monetarily and yet be very rich in favor and a good name. And that is to be chosen over the monetary part of it. But here it is, verse 2. This is the verse that I want to focus on. The rich and the poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. So look at this. The rich and the poor meet together. The guy who runs a multi-million or multi-billion dollar business, he goes in and he meets the poor person who just made him a $5 meal. Okay, they meet together. Guess what? The Lord is maker of them all. So this is not to say that one is better than the other in terms of the value of the person, okay? There are many people who are very satisfied with working in that factory, putting that widget together. Hey, just tell me what to do. I want to come 8 hours with a, you know, 30-minute break in the middle and 2 10-minute breaks somewhere. I want to put the same widget together all day, and that's valuable to me. That's enough value. I'm satisfied, right? I don't need to learn anything more in life. I don't need to do anything more in life. I can drive my car home. Either that's enough to buy groceries for my family, or it probably isn't. If you want to buy groceries for your family, you probably need to do something a little more than that. Maybe it's enough to go home and play your video games or whatever. But it would be better in terms of value provision to do something more, but it doesn't increase your value as a person, okay? The Lord is maker of them all. Verse 4, just to wrap it up, the reward for humility and fear of the Lord is riches and honor and life. So just keep in mind, if you have humility in your business, you have the fear of the Lord. Remember, that's the beginning of wisdom, and wisdom is how you build wealth, because you could build all this stuff. You're going to have to leave it here. You really are. That's riches and honor and life. And we have riches in Christ. The Bible talks about that all the time. If you're a believer, you know that everything we have on this earth is just the surface. There's so much more to our spiritual life before God and with God than just what we see here. So that's what I have for today. I hope you found it helpful. If you want to pick up your whole steward cap, there's a couple of them on there. I'm still trying to figure out the website, so bear with me on that. But hey, it's fun. We're having fun here. I'm learning. You're learning. Let me know what you're learning. I really want to hear from you. And leave a review for the show. It really helps. So we can get the word out to more and more people about the whole steward. That's all I have. Now that you know more, go out and grow more.
All content on The Whole Steward is for informational purposes only and must not be considered personal, professional, tax, or legal advice. Please consult an appropriate professional for individualized advice. Though we do our best to bring you reliable information, we make no guarantee on its accuracy, so you must rely on your own due diligence to draw your own conclusions. The views expressed by guests on the show are their own and may not represent that of the host. Please visit our website for complete terms and conditions.
Thanks for joining us today for The Holistic Approach to Wealth from a Christian Worldview. This show is brought to you by TheWholeSteward.com.